This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, May 7th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. There was a time when the average Republican cared genuinely about good governance and keeping federal spending under control. It appears that time is long gone, as conservatives have steadily turned toward attempting to use big government for conservative ends. Democrats have gone one better. They appear to have stopped pretending to care about deficits and debt. Eric Boehm is a reporter at Reason. His latest cover story for the magazine is about the fights over spending that aren't happening.
It is 2021. How complete would you say is the abandonment of fiscal responsibility among Republicans?
It is almost complete, with the exception of maybe some performative antics here and there as a way to prevent Democratic policy priorities from passing at times. But even during the pandemic, we haven't really seen that certainly not be an effective strategy, although it's still something that Republicans kind of reflexively grope towards for like rhetorical points. There's very little, I think, right now in the conservative caucuses, of course, very fractured. So it's difficult to draw any like real conclusions about them. But I think generally you don't see conservatives right now prioritizing fiscal conservatism. At all. You don't see much concern from elected leaders in Congress about debts and deficits. And I think really more importantly, you didn't see any of that when they had the opportunity to actually do some important things in that space during the Trump administration when Republicans controlled not just the White House, but Congress as well. And what did they do? They removed the discretionary spending caps that had been put in place by Republicans, many of the same Republicans in many cases during the Obama years. They removed those discretionary spending caps. They approved budgets that blew through those old spending caps and increased spending on the military and on domestic programs, and really just laid the groundwork for making what was already going to be a significant fiscal crisis for the country even worse. Most of the debt and deficit issues that America is going to face in the next decade or so are they're built into the fact that we have kind of runaway entitlement spending. And that's not something that Congress, you know, changes when they pass budgets every year. But rather than try to get their hands around that problem, they made the discretionary part of the problem worse. And so it just compounds the entire mess.
Yeah, the baseline crisis that has been approaching for a long time with runaway entitlement spending. But we haven't really seen the costs of it yet, or at least the big crisis yet. To the extent that Republicans have left aside their scruples when it comes to spending, Democrats seem to have seized that opportunity and said, well, I'll show you what spending looks like.
Sure. I think Democrats now increasingly feel like they don't want to play this deficit politics game that they think has kind of been rigged against them all along. There were two decades or so where Democrats were engaging with Republicans. And you can see this in the political rhetoric going back, really starting at the end of the Clinton administration, but all through the Bush years, when Obama ran against Bush in 2008, he criticized the president. He said it was unpatriotic for President Bush to have run up the debt and deficit as much as he did. And then, of course, Obama comes in and there's a huge spending surge in the first few years there because of the Great Recession. But the deficit does come down a bit later in the Obama years. But even then, you still see kind of a bipartisan effort at getting the government's hands around this long-term crisis. You saw, and none of them worked out, but you did see some like bipartisan commissions, Irks and Bowles, things like that in the Obama years. Once Republicans took back control in 2016 and revealed that all of their talk about concern about the debt and concern about fiscal conservatism was just a sham, or mostly a sham, I think Democrats have now fully abandoned, like, well, fine, if you guys are not going to care about this, we're going to stop even pretending to. And that's why you really do see this emergent view on the left. And you don't even have to go as far as some of the more extreme views like modern monetary theory. Even the sort of the mainstream consensus view on the political left now is that larger deficits are fine if that's going to drive economic growth and if it's going to help people, if we can direct the, you know, more government spending towards justice, social justice issues, environmental justice issues, whatever. And you see all of that In the Biden administration, you see all of that just in the first 100 days, the $6 billion, $6 trillion in new spending that President Biden has proposed. That's a huge break from where Democrats have been, from where even kind of the most leftward position of most Democrats have been in the last few decades.
And it's difficult to be the guy standing in the middle of the street saying, no, we can't spend all this money, even though we have massive unemployment, which we did a year ago. And if I were a median Democrat right now, I would look at some of the data currently about inflation, about the amount we're paying in interest on debt, and say, well, it doesn't seem like a crisis right now.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that there's sort of two things that are working in conjunction here, right? There's the short-term one-off emergency spending that has been approved to deal with the pandemic. And I think you can and we should criticize a lot of that as having been wasteful and poorly targeted. But thankfully, most of that is just a one-time thing. It comes off the books. The real problem and the thing that's been driving the rising debt to GDP ratio, for example, that will continue to rise even after the pandemic is well behind us, are entitlement programs. It's Social Security, it's Medicare and Medicaid primarily, which now account for like almost half of the federal budget of the money that the government spends. And just to kind of put all this in context, I think it's interesting to look at the fact that when you adjust for inflation, the amount of money that the federal government spent just 25 years ago, they spent about $2.4 trillion. That's total government spending adjusted for inflation to today's dollars was about $2.4 trillion. We just approved in March a $1.9 trillion one-time emergency spending bill, right? You got 80% of what of everything the federal government did in 1996 could have been paid for by the one-time emergency spending bill that was passed just in March. And that's on top of all the other pandemic spending. So it really is kind of these two competing things that are simultaneously driving us towards the highest debt to GDP ratio the country has ever seen. But even after the pandemic is over, and even after that big chunk of spending comes off the books, we still have these long-term problems to deal with that there's really no political will whatsoever to address right now.
You made note in your cover story, the most recent cover story in Reason Magazine, of the fact that you don't have to go back that far in federal budgets to see total federal spending that is the size of our current deficit.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you don't have to go back even 25 years to get to that point. And that whole piece was kind of built around the idea that Bill Clinton 25 years ago gave one of the few memorable or quotable State of the Union addresses in history when he said that that the era of big government was over. That's just kind of like laughable or ironic, I think, now from the perspective of 25 years later. Obviously, that wasn't the end of the era of big government. And so now we've got a deficit last year that was over $3 trillion. And as I said, when you add up all the things that the federal government paid for in 1996 and adjust it for inflation, that's significantly smaller. It's $2.4 trillion. So there's the fiscal issue. And then I think the other interesting thing about Clinton's address, and the thing that maybe people don't remember, because you remember that one line, it's a great like bumper sticker slogan, and it's also like darkly ironic now from 25 years later. But Clinton went on in that same speech to kind of outline it, you know, that it was more than just a bumper sticker. It was, he said, we know big government does not have all the answers. We know there's not a program for every problem, and we have to give the American people a government that lives within its means. And like, especially the, we know there's not a program for every problem. You don't even hear conservatives saying that today, much less Democrats or liberals, right? You've got Josh Hawley and Mitt Romney and most of the sort of leading Republicans in the Senate are proposing more government programs to solve more problems today. Big spending ones, entitlement programs like a new child tax credit or a child subsidy, which is going to be one of the next big debates that Congress has once the pandemic is over, policy debates. And so it's like that's a conception of government that just doesn't exist right now on either the right or the left.
Yeah, it's weird to think that for so long, at least in my memory, Republicans would stand against expansion of programs that had long been championed by the left. And now it seems, at least within the last 5 years or so, Republicans are thinking, well, as long as we can use big spending for conservative ends, that is supporting the growth of families, allowing a parent to stay home with children. As long as we're doing those things, big spending is okay.
Yeah, I think you saw a pattern of behavior with conservatives for a long time where, and this goes back even, you know, more than 25 years, right? This goes back to the New Deal and to the Great Society, where conservatives would oppose these things when they were passed, and then they would prove eventually to be popular, many of them, even if they're very inefficient, as libertarians point out over and over and over again, but they're politically popular. And then eventually you end up with conservatives sort of embracing and defending them against like whatever the next big change that the progressives are proposing. And you saw a lot of this even as recently as the last presidential election, right, where you had Republicans kind of, after years of fighting Obamacare, now kind of defending Obamacare and saying, oh, no, what the Democrats want to do next is Medicaid for all. And that's going to mean that you lose your health insurance. Right. So there's always been that kind of switch that happens as time goes on. But now I think you're absolutely right. What you're seeing is it's not just Republicans resisting and then kind of reluctantly embracing the political reality of bigger government programs, but actually trying to get out on the forefront. We've kind of gone from a situation where you had Democrats and Republicans both fighting, at least rhetorically, if not always in terms of policy, over who could do a better job of reducing the deficit or at least keeping the deficit stable. And now we've seen it kind of switch the opposite way, where you have both Republicans and Democrats very much rhetorically and then also in a policy sense pushing to expand government as much as they can and take credit for those things.
Do you sense that given the Republicans' abandonment, especially during the Trump years, of a pretense of restraint when it comes to federal spending, that they've sort of kneecapped themselves now that Joe Biden and congressional Democrats want to ramp it up even more?
Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult for Republicans to at least sincerely oppose spending. And I mean, some of this right now is difficult to judge because of the pandemic, right? And as to your point earlier, it's very difficult to be the guy standing there saying, no, don't give more money to people who are out of work because their city government shut down their business, right? So I think that dynamic will evolve as the Biden presidency goes on, and especially as the pandemic really does get fully behind us. I think it's most of the way behind us already, but once it's fully gone, Jared Bernstein, for example, who is now one of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, and he talked about in a piece that was published in the Washington Post in October of last year, just before the election, about how Democrats have to start ignoring the phony caterwauling of the deficit chicken hawks. And he said that the new dynamics of debt not only open economic opportunities, but political ones. If conservatives ignore austerity when they're in power, but Democrats embrace it when they take control. This is Jared Bernstein again, says that then Democrats will consistently fail to meet the needs of their constituents. So basically just saying we have to completely reject this idea that Republicans, once they're out of power, will surely resurrect again of concern about the debt and deficit. And that seems to be the approach that Democrats are now taking. That's very much the mainstream sense from Democrats.
What seems to allow this to continue is the fact that there is, for the most part, maybe a tenuous relationship between the amount of taxes that Americans pay and the distribution of those tax burdens and the amount of spending that the government does. And yet I've seen people like Mike Lee argue for some sort of cap on debt or cap on spending, and it just doesn't ever go anywhere. And to hear Jeff Myron here at Cato talk about it, even if you adopted those things, that doesn't guarantee that those spending restraints would be credible, that Congress would not fiddle with the numbers in order to make their spending plans acceptable.
Sure. And I think you see some of that in the what happened with the discretionary spending caps that were imposed in 2012, right? Congress didn't abide by them for very long. They were successful in some ways in sort of bending the curve of the deficit downward and getting things back, not to a balanced budget, but getting a little bit closer in that direction. And I think any similar restriction is going to face the same sort of challenges. And then the other half of this, of course, that we keep talking about is the mandatory spending, the entitlement spending that the federal government does. And that's, you know, there's no discretionary spending cap that's going to change that. What is going to change that is the fact that Social Security is going to be insolvent in a, maybe another decade, maybe even a little less than that. And that means there'll be automatic 20% benefit cuts across the board when that point is reached. And I think then you have a very obvious political trigger to force Congress to do something, because then people will care, right? Like, the politics will very much change once people's Social Security checks get smaller. The problem is, if you wait that long to start addressing the problem, and this is a point that the people at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget make all the time, Maya McGuinness and the rest of her folks who really do yeoman's work on this issue when nobody wants to talk about it. But they make the point all the time of, the longer you wait to address this, the more difficult it's going to be, the higher taxes we'll have, or the more significant spending cuts you'll have to see just to bring things back into balance.
And the political rewards to avoiding a massive problem just don't seem to be there.
It's always going to be right. I mean, like, President Trump supposedly said, it was reported that he said that he didn't have to worry about the debt and deficit because it wouldn't be a problem till he was out of office. And that's just saying the quiet part loud, which is something he was really good at doing in politics. Is that's always the thing. It's, well, we'll kick it down the road and it'll be the next majority leader's problem or the next Congress's problem. There's no political motivation there. And this is not a thing that people really care about, unless it's a thing that the campaigns are talking about, unless it becomes kind of part of the political discussion in the country. And so I think it's really about candidates for office trying to make this point, even if people aren't super receptive to it. It's an important thing that needs to be talked about, just to sort of lay the groundwork for fixing the problem, you know, who knows, years from now.
Eric Boehm is a reporter at Reason. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.